The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
If you want to deny evolution and live in your world that's completely inconsistent with everything we observe in the universe, that's fine. But don't make your kids do it, because we need them.
How about if we go to Bill Nye and we say, look, you want to believe in a mindless, purposeless goal as evolution, you go ahead and do it. But whatever you do, Bill, don't raise your children that way. Raise them to be Bible-believing Christians and creationists. Now, how far would that go?
Even our confession sucks. And the gracious God in Jesus Christ says, be of good cheer, my son. Your sins are forgiven. Peace be unto you. And all of it based on Christ, not us.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steel worker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues, etc. all day long.
I know what it's like to be a Christian here in the West, and we talk about it being so terrible, so difficult, so inconvenient. We're looked down on. We will even sometimes use the P word, persecuted. And while that might be true in isolated cases, we know nothing here in the West of Christian persecution. What if you were a Christian in the Middle East, in a Muslim culture or some other culture that was openly hostile to not only Christianity as an idea, but to you as a Christian? Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Serge Trifkovic will join us here for the first half hour. We're going to talk about the plight of Christians in the Middle East. A little bit later, we'll teach a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel about the bronze serpent in Numbers chapter 21. Dr. Serge Trifkovic is a regular guest. He's foreign affairs editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. He's author of several books, including The Sword of the Prophet and Defeating Jihad. And he's written an article for the latest issue of Chronicles. It's titled The Disappearing Middle Eastern Christians, and he joins us from Belgrade. Dr. Trifkovic, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Has U.S. military involvement in the Middle East, which now has a pretty long history, made things better or worse for Christians in the Middle East?
Worse. Yeah, it is ironic, but whenever the U.S. appears to bring democracy and peace and stability, the Christian communities seem to disappear. Iraq is, of course, the case in point, because the Christian community of Iraq had survived 13 centuries of Islamic rule, first by the Arabs, then by the Ottomans. And nevertheless, even though their status was that of second-class citizens, they were looked upon as a useful tax base. And the secrets of the survival of Christian communities in the Middle East has primarily to do with their status as the so-called people of the book. So they were discriminated against by the Muslim overlords, but they were not treated as pagans, as, for instance, the Hindus would be in the subcontinent. However, with the arrival of the U.S. in Iraq in 2003, the old order had collapsed. Saddam Hussein, who was, of course, a brutal dictator, was also a secularist, and he had no time for either Shia or Sunni fundamentalism, and was in fact clamping down on them very heavily. Ironically, with the collapse of Saddam's regime, we had the rise of various Sunni and Shia fundamentalist groups, which looked upon their Christian fellow citizens as the potential fifth column for the occupying forces, or simply as people who they will do better without. And so a lot of violence in Iraq after March of 2003 had been directed against various Christian communities, most of them harking back to the very early centuries of Christianity, the Assyrians, the Orthodox, and so on. What happened in the ensuing decade is that roughly four-fifths of them have emigrated. Following various attacks on churches in Baghdad, the most memorable of which were in 2010 and 2011, we witnessed a real veritable surge of requests for visas from either Western Europe, European or American governments. And since the Christians in Iraq tended to be better educated than the majority of Iraqis, they were in fact able to integrate fairly quickly into the new host communities. But the tragedy is that the church is now empty, and the leaders of the community really cannot do much to counter the trend. For instance, when you have a bomb exploding in a Baghdad church, like in October 2010, which killed 44 faithful, what can the bishop of Kirkuk, Louis Sacco, tell his flock? Well, what he said to the U.S. media is that security forces are not sufficiently prepared to ensure the protection of Christians. But this was really a euphemism. This was an understatement. The Iraqi security forces are not really going out of their way to either protect them or to punish the culprits. In fact, most of the incidents resulting in the killings of Christians remain unresolved. And it is to be feared that something similar will happen in Syria if the stated objective of bringing down Bashar al-Assad is successful. But it is not only necessary to have the presence of U.S. troops in a country for the position of Christians to deteriorate. Political pressure from the United States sometimes has a similar effect. Let's look at Egypt. After the election of first the parliamentary election and then the presidential election, there had been a lot of pressure from Washington on the generals in Egypt to cede power to the democratically elected civilian authorities. Well, as it happens, those democratically elected authorities are either outright members of the Muslim Brotherhood or affiliated with it, or de facto members without formally belonging to its structure. So the Egyptian parliament has already started passing measures concerning the ban on alcohol or restriction of sales, on the modest dressing on the beaches, which means black long robes and certainly no bikinis. And only the other night, for the first time, an announcer appeared on Egyptian state television, a female announcer, with a proper Islamic hijab on her head. And the effect on the Coptic Christians of Egypt, which is the largest Christian community in the Middle East, estimated at some 7 to 10 million right now, is accordingly deteriorating. For instance, right now we are hearing demands for the exclusion of Christian deputies from the committee that will draft the new Egyptian constitution. And what we are also witnessing is retaliation for incidents involving Christians and Muslims against entire communities. For instance, there is a village just south of Cairo, a mere 25 miles south of Cairo, in which what seemed like a trivial example resulted in the killing of 14 people and the torching of an entire Christian neighborhood. So that even under Mubarak, we had a policy of collective punishment of Copts, and the army would stay on the sidelines, but it is to be feared that now it's becoming institutionalized. In the village of Dahshur, which I just mentioned, 120 families have fled the village, and the businesses and homes were put to torch without any intervention from the military. And, of course, what will happen in Syria if Bashar al-Assad falls remains to be seen. but what the Syrian rebels are already doing to the Christians in areas they control does not bode well for their future.
So with about a minute or so here before we take a break, it sounds like the Arab Spring, as it was once called, has proven to be a precipitous event for Middle Eastern Christians, generally speaking, not only in Egypt. About a minute.
Well, it was to be expected, because those of us who had always warned that democratization of the Muslim world means Islamization of those states almost inevitably leads to the deterioration of the Christian position. We've seen it also in Turkey, where creeping Islamization by the ruling AKP party is resulting in the closing of the remaining churches and new measures against the revival of the only Orthodox seminary in the Marmara Sea.
What about U.S. support for Israel, not only for Christians, Palestinian Christians, but kind of generally speaking, the mood for Christians in the Middle East? What has U.S. support for Israel done to either better or worsen it?
It has placed the Christians between a rock and a hard place, because being perceived as supportive of U.S. policies means becoming de facto allies of the Zionist enemy. On the other hand, those Christians who want to express solidarity with their fellow Palestinians are in the paradoxical situation of supporting a political entity in which Hamas is gradually taking over from the largely secular Fatah movement.
We'll take a break. Dr. Serge Trifkovic is our guest. We're talking about the plight of Christians in the Middle East. It's Friday afternoon, September the 7th. Dr. Trifkovic is foreign affairs editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. He's author of several books, including The Sword of the Prophet and Defeating Jihad. And he has written an article for the latest issue of Chronicles titled The Disappearing Middle Eastern Christians. He joins us from Belgrade. When we come back, we'll talk about Syria. He's mentioned Syria here, but Syria has a significant Christian population. In fact, I think its Christian population equals that of its Muslim population, something of a stronghold in the Middle East for Christians. I'll get his thoughts on that right after this. Stay tuned. We have a special premium for first-time donors to Issues Etc. It's the new Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad. We'll send it to you for your first-time donation to Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make your first-time gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Thanks for your support.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love
the truth. The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
back to Issues Etc. We're discussing the plight of Christians in the Middle East on this Friday afternoon, September the 7th, with Dr. Serja Trifkovic. Serja, before the break, you were talking about Syria. You mentioned it briefly. It is, at least in terms of a Christian-Muslim population, still something of a stronghold for Christianity in the Middle East. What are your thoughts there?
It is curious, but under the two Assads, and their rule has lasted for over 30 years now, the Christians have enjoyed something of a privileged position in Syria. This is because the Alawite community, to which the ruling circle belongs, both Assads and the top-ranking politicians, and in particular the military officers, belong to this Shia sect, which is regarded by Orthodox Sunni Muslims as heretical. They were deliberately playing the game of co-opting other minorities into the ruling circle so that it could present the counterweight to the Sunni majority, which is around two-thirds, between 65 and 70% of Syrians are Sunni Muslims. And this has bred a lot of resentment among the Sunnis. And now when Bashar al-Assad is under heavy pressure and has been for a year and a half, the Christians are again between a rock and a hard place, because on the one hand they're being accused of supporting a brutal dictator and resisting democratization, but on the other hand, if the rebels are successful and the rebels are dominated by the Syrian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, then it stands to reason that their position will be comparable to that of the Iraqi Christians after the fall of Saddam. So in terms of the Shia struggle for survival, they can hardly be blamed for being very skeptical about what the future would bring under a different regime, because let's face it, in the absence of a strong and authoritarian rule of the Assad dynasty, what we'll have is, first of all, a power struggle within the rebel movement, and then quite possibly serious fragmentation into areas controlled by the Alawites, by the Kurds, by the Shiites, and, of course, by the Sunnis. Now, the position of the Christians is vulnerable because they're mainly urban population in Syria, and they're mainly professionals, merchants, and they are not really capable of creating an area of their own because they do not inhabit the countryside, or at least most of them tend to live in the cities. So they will find themselves at the mercy of whoever happens to be in control in a given area. If, on the other hand, there is an outright collapse of the regime and the rebels march into Damascus, what we'll witness is most likely a Muslim Brotherhood government which will co-opt as window dressing members of other communities, but in which the guiding light will be Sharia.
So the role of the Muslim Brotherhood seems to be in Egypt, potentially in Syria, to at least, you said window dressing, to rule under the guise of a generalized Islam? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, we have to remember that the Muslim Brotherhood came into being at the time of British dominance in Egypt in the late 1920s as an outright reaction against the wave of secularism that at that time was sweeping the Arab world. Because many Arab intellectuals, and ironically many of them were Christians, regarded the Western model of secularism combined with nationalism as the recipe for some kind of recovery of a blueprint for success which was eluding the Muslims during the long centuries of Ottoman decline. Well, what happened in 1927 is that a school teacher in Egypt, a young man by the name of Banar, started an organization that actually regarded the return to what he saw as genuine Islam, the Islam of the early successors to Muhammad, was the true solution. And that it was far from a mere political force. It was actually a radical fundamentalist response to the challenge of modernity that presented the Arab world in the aftermath of the Ottoman collapse in World War I. So we have to remember that ever since it came into being over 80 years ago, the Muslim Brotherhood was not only value neutral vis-a-vis other models of social and political organization, but was in its very early days envisioned as a reaction against secularism and westernization, and today it is inherently opposed to the model of secular democracy that the United States says it would like to see. Well, ironically, on the U.S. side, we are witnessing a gradual process of proclaiming the Muslim Brotherhood not to be fundamentalist after all. So much is this self-deception making inroads into decision-making process that James Clapper, the director of National Intelligence, told the House Select Committee on Intelligence last year that the Brotherhood is an umbrella term for a variety of movements. He called it a very heterogeneous group, and amazingly, he said, it's largely secular, and it has given up violence and decried Al-Qaeda as a perversion of Islam. Now, it has indeed decried Al-Qaeda, but for different reasons, because the Muslim Brotherhood does not believe that Al-Qaeda's approach is useful. They believe that it is far better to present a different face to infidels, to tell them that they can be cooperative, and at a given moment to show their true intent. And they regard Al-Qaeda as counterproductive and as more likely to awaken the West to the danger of Islamic fundamentalism and then to scare it into withdrawing from the Muslim world. But it is particularly amazing for the director of National Intelligence to call the Brotherhood a largely secular group, because its slogan is very simple. Allah is our objective. The Prophet is our leader. Quran is our law. Jihad is our way. Dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope. Some secularists. In other words, the Brotherhood is a revivalist movement that opposes the ascendancy of secular ideas and advocates a return to integral Islam, whatever integral Islam means. But in their perception, it is the model of society created by the four successors, the four first caliphs after Muhammad.
Finally then, Sergio, with about 2 minutes here or so, eventually Middle Eastern Christians run out of places to emigrate to. They run out of places to go. Can anything be done to improve the plight of Christians in the Middle East?
Well, several things can be done to improve the situation, and the first would be for the U.S. to stop meddling in Syria. I'm not suggesting that the U.S. should reverse its policy 180 degrees and come to the aid of Bashar al-Assad. But I think that at least it should be considered as a viable option to let the Syrians resolve their differences by themselves, and certainly not to be willfully blind to the likelihood of a very unpleasant and inherently anti-American regime coming to power. Because if there is some kind of political solution in Syria, if in the fullness of time there is a negotiating process which does not start with a demand for Bashar's outright removal, then it is possible that there will be also a power-sharing arrangement that might contain the possibility for the Christians to stay. If there is an outright victory by the rebel side, then I am afraid there is very little that can be done. As far as Egypt is concerned, in view of the outright help that the Muslim Brotherhood has received from Hillary Clinton and others in recent months, while the Brotherhood was still uncertain whether the generals would give up or not, I think that it would be perfectly reasonable for the U.S. State Department to express concern about the treatment of the Coptic community, even to lodge protests about the failure of the Egyptian military to protect the Copts when the Muslim riot starts and the neighborhoods go to torch. And last, but by no means least, I believe that a direct financial assistance to the Coptic community in Egypt for the establishment of a viable political structure should be treated in the same way as various nascent political movements used to be in the late communist and early post-communist Eastern Europe.
Dr. Serge Trifkovic is foreign affairs editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. He has written an article in the latest issue of Chronicles titled The Disappearing Middle Eastern Christians. He is author of several books, including The Sword of the Prophet and Defeating Jihad, and he joins us from Belgrade. You can find a link to this article, The Disappearing Middle Eastern Christians, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Serge, thank you very much for your time.
It was my pleasure.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker will be with us. We'll be talking about the bronze serpent in Numbers chapter 21. How can we fill the 400-year gap between the Old and New Testaments? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with notes. You can find out more about this new resource at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Apocrypha by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with study notes.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia; Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas; Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri; Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California; Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas; Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri; Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas; Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas; and Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How would you like to win a 4-CD set of 45 Reformation hymns? It's titled Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church. Now here is how you enter this contest. First, like the Facebook fan page for Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Second, post an invitation for your Facebook friends to listen to Lutheran Public Radio. And third, send the text of your Facebook post and the number of your Facebook friends to contest@issuesetc.org. We'll give away this 4-CD set, Heirs of the Reformation, to the contestant with the best Facebook post and to the contestant with the most number of Facebook friends. We'll announce the winner on Monday, October the 1st. Participate in a Facebook contest for Lutheran Public Radio during the month of September.